Welcome to Podcast Ed, the podcast of reimaginedonline.org, covering the stories behind the new world of public education. On this episode, Step Up for Students President Doug Tuthill talks to New Hampshire State Representative Glenn Cordelli, Vice Chair of the State House Education Committee. After a five-year legislative battle, New Hampshire passed a landmark education savings account that begins this fall. The two discuss the legislative dynamics in New Hampshire that ultimately led to the ESA, the empowerment for teachers in a world with more choice and customization, and future plans for education choice expansion in New Hampshire, including the development of community learning pods. Thank you for listening and enjoy the episode.
So I'm excited today to have Representative Glenn Cordelli, who is a Republican for New Hampshire. Representative Cordelli is on the House Education Committee. He's the vice chair. He's been in office since 2012. So welcome, Representative.
Thank you. Thank you for having me today.
So you were a major sponsor of the Education Freedom Accounts legislation that recently passed in New Hampshire. It's got a lot of national attention, as you know. And people around the country are really excited about it. But before we start in talking about that legislation, a lot of people don't understand some of the dynamics in New Hampshire. Your house is particularly unusual. I know
yes.
you have 400 House members representing 204 districts. So my question is, how in the world does that work? I mean, how do you do that?
It works very well. Sometimes it can be, as they say, like herding cats, but we each represent about 3,500 people, and we earn a whopping $100 a year minus taxes. So it's really a volunteer position, but it's a labor of love for many of us.
How do you organize floor debates with 400 people? What's that look like?
That can be challenging, but it's usually the chair of the committee that is promoting the bill that organizes the floor debate and works with leadership to get that accomplished.
Well, someday I'd like to come up and see it. I'm sure it's pretty interesting to watch.
it's fascinating. We'd love to have you.
Yeah, well, it's democracy in its purest form, so that's fantastic.
That's right. Yes.
So let's talk a little about education choice in New Hampshire before this session. I'm just curious what the context was before you guys had such an amazing session this year. What was in place in New Hampshire before this session?
Well, we passed a tax credit scholarship program like that in Florida and other places back in 2012. And to get that accomplished, we actually had to override the governor's veto.
Wow.
Which we did. There was a legal challenge that went to the state Supreme Court, but we won that battle. So that's been a very successful program. Since then, we've tried for several years to get education savings accounts, or as I like to call it, education freedom accounts, passed here. I put in a bill back in 2016 when I saw what was happening in other states with savings accounts. And that was just for a study committee. How do we structure this? Who runs it? Who manages it? I wanted to, you know, try and build consensus as to how we move forward. It was defeated, the study committee. So then in 2017, we organized a group of people, different organizations to participate. And we actually introduced in that legislative session a House bill that would be geared toward children with special needs. And then in the Senate, we introduced a universal education freedom accounts bill, thinking that, well, that bill is going to draw all the fire and maybe we can sneak in the special needs child savings accounts bill through the House. Our bill in the House was passed, then went to Finance as a second committee and ran into problems there. Opposition, a lot of opposition from disability groups.
Interesting.
Interesting enough. Yes. They're going to lose their rights under IDEA.
Right.
Was the argument. So that bill finally got to the House floor and was tabled because we didn't have the votes to pass it. Meanwhile, our universal bill in the Senate passed the Senate. So then it came over to the House, and our education committee made a lot of compromises in order to get it out of the education committee and got it to the House floor and passed it on the House floor. But then again, it had to go through our finance committee. And there again is where we ran into problems. We lost by 7 votes. The next term, we had a Democrat majority in the House and the Senate. So we held our fire on another attempt. And so this year, we again tried both House and Senate bills. This time, it was the same bill introduced in the House and the Senate, both universal. It expanded to include homeschooled children and private school children, any child who was eligible to attend a public school in New Hampshire. We had problems getting it out of our education committee, which was a huge disappointment. And so we retained the bill in committee. And our friends in the Senate did a great job and got it passed in the Senate. They saw what happened in the House. So they said, well, we're not going to take a chance in sending this back over to the House because we're learning from what happened last time.
Right.
So they tabled the bill and then put it in our budget. It was a fantastic budget. It included the education freedom accounts, and we got it passed by both houses and signed the next day by the governor a couple of weeks ago. So so that is now the law of the land, and we're working hard to get things up and running for education freedom accounts in September.
Well, that's a long journey, but that's an extraordinary story. Talk about the opposition. What were the arguments against the bill? And I'm also curious, a lot of states, you know, this is obviously a red-blue issue. Republicans tend to have a much stronger sort of libertarian streak and tend to have a lot more faith in parents. And Democrats tend to prefer the system. Obviously, teacher unions are a major funder of the Democratic Party, so that's a major constituency. Superintendents and school boards also tend to be very conservative as it relates to empowerment. I don't know if that's the right use of the word conservative, but they tend to not want to, you know, embrace parental empowerment. So, but also in some states, rural Republicans struggle with this issue because they're concerned about their local school districts, and oftentimes their local school districts are the largest employer. So I'm curious about the political dynamics, first sort of the Democrat-Republican dynamics and establishment arguments, and also if you had any issues with rural Republicans concerned also.
There have been issues within the Republican Party, especially in the House with 400 members. it's quite a challenge to get everybody on the same page.
Right.
But I think that one of the arguments that I've always used is something that Thomas Sowell once said, and that's that the basic question is not what is best, but who says what is best. And we believe it's parents.
Right.
And there have been some challenges within the Republican majority in both cases. And I don't know if it's a rural, urban type of issue, but there's certainly some Republicans who are very beholden to the education establishment in their district. And I think that's where the opposition has come from within our party. But the Democrat arguments, it's very interesting. They call it a voucher plan. They refuse to call it education savings accounts or freedom accounts. Right. They feel it has a connotation there. They use the argument that it's going to dismantle the public school system and privatize education, and that it's going to drain education funding for public schools, which are the exact same arguments that they used in 2012 when we passed the education scholarship accounts. So we can point to that and say, you know, you were wrong then, you were wrong now. It's not going to happen. We, you know, we have statistics from around the country as to participation rates and parental satisfaction. We've seen it across the nation with what's happened in the past year. We've seen a wildfire across the country with education freedom. And I think that that is just going to continue into the future. And I think the momentum is with education freedom and parents in this effort.
So I want to get a little more detail. You talked about the program started off as a universal proposal, but I think what finally passed was a little bit different. So can you give me the more specifics? I mean, I think it's 300% of poverty and below is eligible. Is that correct?
That's correct. Anytime you try something big like this, you're going to have to be willing to compromise some.
Sure.
And our philosophy was, you know, we'll compromise some. We won't lose the basic principles of the program, but we want to get it established and then go from there. And so, yes, the Senate changed it to 300% of federal poverty, which I believe is currently something like $79,000. Right. Dollars for a family of four,
right.
But kept the universal nature in that anyone who is eligible to go to a public school can participate in the program. So it's probably one of the broadest education savings account, freedom account programs in the nation. You know, I was disappointed that West Virginia maybe beat us to the number one ranking, but this is the live free or die state, and so we're going to continue trying to get that number one ranking.
Well, I hope you make it. I also note it's once in, always in, right? So
that's correct.
That's yes. A fantastic. You know, things that you got in 1 year, it took us 20 years in Florida. So you're way ahead of us in terms of that area. I also want to talk a little bit about some of the specifics that you did, some really cool things that I think are very impressive. The program is basically all electronic. From what I can tell, there's no paper. So families will go online. There'll be some sort of portal or platform in which they will choose a service or a product to purchase. Those things will be pre-approved, and then the infrastructure will pay up front for the services or the products. And so there's no reimbursement. Am I right about all that?
Yes. And there again, we've learned from what happened in other states in Arizona with their startup. And
right.
I remember a conference and hearing a senator from Nevada talk about don't let government agency run the program, no matter what you do, even if it's the agriculture department, don't let them do it.
Right.
So our Children's Scholarship Foundation, who manages the tax credit scholarship program, will manage this program as well. And we're going to be using a system called Class Wallet,
right,
who's used in a number of places around the country. And they've already started to implement that with the scholarship program. So they're gearing up very quickly to use that for the freedom accounts. And from what I hear, that's going well, and they're up to speed in how it's going to work. And working with the department to get the applications nailed down and getting that all in place. So we'll be ready to go. And there's a lot of interest already. Even before this bill passed, there was a lot of interest left over from when we tried back in 2017. People saying, you know, when is this going to happen? So there's a pent up interest in the program, and people are writing now, Facebook and Twitter, you know, when can we sign up? When are the applications going to be ready? So I think that there'll be a good number of people being eligible and ready for accounts in September. I think it will just build from there. As you said, you know, once it's established, I think it'll be hard to turn it around, just like we've seen with the scholarship, tax credit scholarship program. Every term, there are bills put in by our friends on the other side to repeal the program. And every year with those bills and the public hearings, parents turn out by the hundreds and children to argue for the program. So I think that we will just this will be the launch, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, we started with 1,600 kids our first year on our ESA. And after 6 years, we got up to about 19,000. So it grew every year in demand. And we would have a 2,000-kid waiting list every year, and we had to keep going back and get more appropriations. We finally, last session, got on automatic pilot, so it'll increase every year. So hopefully we won't have a waiting list. But, yeah, once people taste freedom, it turns out they like it.
Right. And we're also already getting complaints about the 300% income limit, but that's natural. And hopefully that that will build as well to build demand for increasing that so that additional families are eligible.
Well, that was my next question. What happens next? What are your next plans moving forward?
There are several things we want to tweak in the bill. It's not as clear in the Senate bill as it was in the House amendments that the education freedom accounts can be used for tuition in out-of-district public schools.
Right.
So we want to clarify that in the language. We're going to wrestle with in the next year trying to increase that income limit or let things settle down. Already today we've seen the NEA in New Hampshire threaten lawsuits and even threaten a move to unionize in private schools. So that'll be very interesting to watch their movements. But we'll probably tweak the bill a little bit next year. But education freedom is going to expand in New Hampshire. We had a bill for public school choice also to do away with district boundaries.
Right.
And we retained that in House Education. I wanted to look at more issues and how things are handled in other states around the country. So that's something I'm going to be working on this summer, and hopefully have some more debate about that next year. I think we'll just continue to build education freedom opportunities in New Hampshire. Another new program that I think plays into it is something championed by our commissioner, which he calls Recovering Bright Futures. And this is a partnership with Prenda Learning Pods,
right,
to set up a district or community learning pods in New Hampshire for next 2 years using federal funds. But then after that, we'll have the education freedom accounts, and they can be used to fund the teachers in the learning pods. So I think that that's another learning opportunity that will be open to parents. And we shouldn't neglect teachers as well, because I think what we've seen is that teachers want freedom as well. They deserve education freedom. In New Hampshire, two certified teachers can start a charter school. And with pods opening up and micro schools, I think the education marketplace will respond just like any other marketplace, and will gain more opportunities in maybe the rural parts of northern New Hampshire. And I'm working with a startup group on a charter school in my area here now. So education freedom is going to expand across the nation, and here is in New Hampshire as well, for sure.
You know, I love the teacher point. I taught for a long time as a high school teacher, and I always resented the fact that I didn't have the same professional opportunities as other professions. A doctor could have a doctor's office, a lawyer could have a lawyer's office, an accountant could have an accountant office. But pretty much as a teacher, you had to work for the man. You know, you had to be part of this large industrial factory. And now, like you said, with all the innovation, particularly ESAs, which give the consumers control of their spending dollars, a teacher can actually make a living with a 10 or 12 student micro school or a learning pod. By the way, I've interviewed a couple times Kelly Smith, who's the CEO of Aprenda.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
That's happening all over the country. People are very interested. But like I said, I think one of the primary beneficiaries of that is going to be teachers, who now have more opportunities to be more professional, to be more entrepreneurial, to be more innovative. It's always been frustrating to work as part of this large bureaucracy, and I just think it's going to be a huge opportunity for teachers to innovate, and you'll see the market, like you said, start to operate the way the market ought to. So it's very exciting.
And I think parents in the past year with the pandemic and remote learning, there was a window into education for parents. That exposed, you know, some great things, but some not so great things. And we've seen around the nation, and certainly in New Hampshire, debates about masks and critical race theory. And I think as much as parents are upset about some of the things going on, teachers are as well. And they will be looking for these other options and opportunities also.
It's a good way to de-escalate a lot of these political debates, because when you're forced by law to attend a school, whether it's sex education, whether it's issues around race or whatever, those can be really contentious. And giving families the freedom to choose the right environment, I think, can de-escalate some of that tension. You know, if you want to be in a school that teaches X, go there. If you don't want to, go someplace else. You know, it's when you're forced by law to attend a school and don't have any choices, and your children are being taught things that you don't approve of as a parent, that's when you get a lot of tension. So I'm hoping that our democracy will be strengthened as people have more freedom to raise their children the way they'd like.
Yes. So in New Hampshire, live free or die will also become live free and learn.
Yeah, I've heard that. That's fantastic. So
yeah.
I'm just really impressed with all the things that you guys have done up there. For your colleagues around the country, do you have any advice to other legislators that would like to someday catch up to New Hampshire? I mean, what can they learn from your process? One thing I know is resilience. You certainly have been resilient. Are there other things, other lessons learned that you'd like to share?
I think build a team, a support mechanism, both within the legislature and outside. We worked with great people around the state, but also nationally. EdChoice, Excellence Education, were critical in helping us build a coalition. And we met on a weekly basis to talk about what's going on, strategies, who do we need to talk to in the legislature? You know, is leadership on board? All those things helped immensely. And I think that certainly compromise will be part of it. But don't be discouraged. You know, as you said, it took a while down in Florida and it took a while here. So, you know, I think with the national movement, parental movement, grassroots involvement, that's going to help in all future states moving toward education freedom opportunities.